This sermon has been revised. The current version is 4/20/14. This sermon was recorded on December 13th, year 2009, the third Sunday in Advent, Gaudete Sunday.
My sister Laura was asked two questions. One of them in relation to guardian angels that was interesting, because she was talking to a Jew, trying to convert the Jew. Her name was Sherry or something like that. And the Jew was talking about, I think, something about how this spirit being communicates with her or something. I don't know. But anyway, Laura was saying that, well, you better watch, that's a devil. She said, but don't people have guardian angels? Well, yeah, they do. You know. Now, Laura's question first, and I'll answer that, was, does God give guardian angels to all people or only to the predestined? No, he gives it to everybody. Everybody. I mentioned that in one of my sermons, which I'll check Laura and you can listen to it. He gives guardian angels to everybody. For the remotest pagan on the island. Why? First of all, that pagan on the island would not even be living for 1 second if he didn't have a guardian angel. God loves all men. He wills for them to be saved, and he protects all men, even the pagans. So everybody gets a guardian angel. And that's if right now even, the pagans on the island, if they don't have a guardian angel, they're dead instantaneously. An angel maintains your life. He prevents the devil from killing you. The devil would kill anybody who's not in a state of grace instantly if he could, because he'd like to bring him down to hell. So the first purpose is what I call this natural help from God, or natural grace, which doesn't work towards his salvation, but just sustains his life long enough. And then the guardian angel also helps that person to make the right decisions with the natural law, to inspire them to search for the true God. So everybody has a guardian angel, everybody. Now, is there a point in time when God will then tell a guardian angel to abandon somebody if they're really bad and they sinned against the Holy Ghost? Even then, I don't think so, but you can have that opinion, because the person would die. That angel then would basically only be doing one thing. He's no longer helping that person to save his soul, because God determined the person's a reprobate. God no longer gives that person grace. He's a reprobate. Only God, and whoever God knows, and his angel would know that. All the angel can do then for that person is keep him physically alive till God gives the word that he allows him to be killed or murdered. And then when God gives that word, your guardian angel's still there, but he stands back and lets you die. And even goes with you towards to your particular judgment when you die. Your guardian angel is there. Alright? So, everyone does have a guardian angel. Her question was on that point, because this particular woman thought it was a good angel, and Laura was saying, she said the angel, one of the things was telling her to do something good. So Laura said, yeah, well, it's possible it's the good angel, because the good angel does help you. But you gotta be careful, it could be from the demonic spirit too. And Matthew and I were talking about it. A lot of times inspirations can come from God, it can come from the devil. Your good angel or your bad angel, it's true. But you always got to be on guard, and you have to judge everything in the light of the faith. But even pagans, that's how they come to the truth. Their angel is helping them. God's actual grace is helping them, is inspiring them, and moving down the road. So we know we got devils trying to inspire us in our concupiscent flesh, really in it, in our concupiscent flesh, and tempting us and all that. But we also have guardian angels. Everybody has a guardian angel. And I believe even those who sinned against the Holy Ghost even have it. But only at that point, he can no longer help that person save his soul. He's just protecting that person from being killed until God says, on June 22nd, year 2010, that person dies. Then the guardian angel has to sit back and allow it, with anybody who God allows to die, but let alone. So, yes, but you can probably hold the opinion that God may even pull the guardian angel away in one sense, but if God did that, you'd be dead. You wouldn't even be alive. I think that's when God tells the guardian angel, no longer protect his life, back off, I'm going to let him die. So everyone has a guardian angel. Okay, the second one, but I'll get into it briefly, point 31. I think Laura was a little confused when she read it. I don't know if she was talking, because I think she was talking to Barbara too. I don't know if she was talking to Barbara, but she's trying to convert them. But point 31 has to do with the idea of when you fall outside the Catholic Church, and my point when I reached it, in the latter days of the Great Apostasy, everybody that belongs in Vatican II Church is outside the Church, is on the road to hell, and is outside the Church in the latter days. And when we came to the conclusions, how do you really judge that? We judge that it depends on the church you're going to, the small church that you belong to. And there's two ways that can happen, not just one way. But the minute that church becomes a non-Catholic church, everybody that's in that church is in schism, because they're not united to the true church, because that church is teaching heresy. And so the first way he's out is schism. The second way you fall out is the minute you hear a heresy and you accept that heresy, you're now a heretic too. He's first a schismatic. This was the thing God gave to me down this long trial. I always held the dogma. I always did. I was looking for the right answer, and God gave it to me. If you read my book, When Do the Churches Become Non-Catholic Churches and Baptize Non-Catholic Children, that answers it. Folks, it's not just Vatican II. My church I attended, Our Lady Good Counsel in Newark, New Jersey, was not a Catholic church. I know I did too, and I can give you a lot of things that happened in my life to tell you how I was out at the church. I knew it, even when I was a kid. And I knew what caused me, because when I learned that heresy in the catechism, it hit me like a thunderbolt. And whatever, that's why I consciously held, I didn't believe that heresy, but I knew it was wrong. My point is, it's not just a Vatican II thing. You have to look at every individual so-called church that calls it Catholic and see what's being taught in that church. That's what determines your faith. That determines what you're adhering to. Because even before Vatican II, you had a bunch of apostate so-called, Gibbons, he's not a real cardinal, neither was Ireland. 90% of these priests were not Catholic priests. You can't say everybody went to hell who just went to every one of these churches. They were under one of these guys, but you could definitely say that if they were in a non-Catholic church in their local parish that was teaching heresy in the church, they're all outside the church, every one of them. Because the debate will go, or okay, Ibrani, tell me, what heresy did he hold? He wasn't even taught a heresy yet. He believes in the incarnation. They taught him about the Holy Trinity. They taught him about a few basics. So he never learned a heresy yet, so therefore he's Catholic. And this is their argument. That was the Diamond Brothers' argument. On the deepest issue is the one I just brought up, that they fall out by schism. What is schism? You are not united with true Catholics. That church is not a Catholic church. If that church teaches that you can be saved outside the Catholic church, dying as a Protestant, that whole church is gone. If anybody's of goodwill in that church, God will get them to get up and walk out of that church, denounce the guy, and go to another church. But the first sin is schism. If you read point 31, I make no, there's no leeway in that point to get anybody who's in that church inside the church. They're all out of it. And when this all started, even Brian Casper was a little confused, and he wrote me and he said, Richard, but what about my kids? They're 13 and 14, and I see they have a hard time. And I said, Brian, I don't care about what you think about your kids when you look at them. They look innocent, they look young, they look like they're maybe too stupid to know certain things. Don't go there, because the minute you get your kids off the hook, it's no different than a 25-year-old kid who never heard about the Catholic faith who's invincibly ignorant of our dogmas. It's no different than your 13 or 12-year-old or 11-year-old kid. I knew it right away, and I never denied the dogma. Brian Caspar was waffling a little. He wasn't sure. And I said, I can't give you the theological explanation yet, but I know they're not in the church. All right, now, the ultimate solution came when Baptized Non-Catholic Children was probably my most miraculous book. It really was. It was laid on a platter to me after many years of trying to get this, and it just flowed out. And that's the first sin they commit. So, okay, so the kid hasn't been taught a heresy. He's in schism because he's not in a Catholic church. He's in a non-Catholic church, and he's a member of that non-Catholic church. I don't care whether he calls himself Catholic till he's blue in the face. See, that's why you really got to. That's why I tell the brothers, now we're learning how important it is to read my books. The question she asked, she would have known if she read my books. But that's why it is important. These are deep questions that you will get hit with. And Baptized Non-Catholic Children is the book you got to read. And When Did They Become Non-Catholic Churches is the article you want to read. And that covers those two topics.
You say that we know officially that all of them were non-Catholic in 1997 when it was promulgated publicly.
Because of the catechism.
Sure, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's probably, we don't know for sure.
I know what you're saying.
But that's the final day that we know that all, yeah. Everybody.
That's, yeah.
That was when it was promulgated.
The New Catechism. Yeah. I didn't give a date anymore because of one reason, because people can argue. And the reason I didn't give a date was because somebody might come out and say, well, the New Catechism was promulgated, but this Society of St. John and Pequannock never used it because they don't like it. Some of them didn't use it because they rejected it. Even early on, not everybody used the Baltimore Catechism that I grew up on. Some in the Midwest, like your Germanic communities in the United States, didn't learn the Salvation Heresy. They didn't. They really held the dogma because they didn't have the one I had. So there were different. If you look at the Baltimore Catechism, some of them had the heresy. Some of them it was ambiguous and heresy wasn't explicit in there. And now those churches were Catholic churches. So it all depends on the church. And that I don't give a date specifically now because I say, now you could, I mean, if the New Catechism, so-called, is promulgated and all, and they are teaching, and I think they are, they're gone. They're gone. Why is the Society of St. Pius X not Catholic churches from day one? They teach the Salvation Heresy. And that goes, so the formula I gave there is not only good for the Vatican II Church, it's good for the pre-Vatican II period of time when we know, like the parishes I grew up in, I know. I can get into my experiences, how I knew I was out of the church and everything. You know, I loved God and everything, but I was out of the church. And God says, you know, if you, I'll get you in when the time is right, but you're not in the church. Sorry, Richard. The church you're in is a non-Catholic church. That's no different than saying a guy belongs to, you're in a place that's all Anglican, and the kid never heard of the Catholic church at all. He goes to the Anglican church for the first day, and he's told about the Holy Trinity, the Incarnation, which is true dogmas. And he never, and they say, well, isn't he Catholic? As long as they keep teaching the dogma, he hasn't held a heresy yet? No, he's not, because it's an Anglican church. I'm sorry. Oh, he thinks he's Catholic. They say they're the true Catholics. I don't care. You've got to look at the objective reality of the church and the objective reality of the child
who adheres to the church. Even infants who adhere to the church are outside the Catholic church.
Not somebody who happened to walk into a non-Catholic church thinking it's a real Catholic church. And he doesn't belong to that church. It was your, it's your adherence to that church that pops you out. Now, somebody might say, well, what happens if there's a good little person in there? Then God will get it to him. God will get the information to him. When I took that catechism and I learned a heresy, I tell the brothers 1,000 times. I tell them 1,000,000 times if I have to. When I was reading on the one page, there's no salvation outside the Catholic Church. I turned the next page. And they said, however, there is salvation outside the Catholic Church. And they had ropes hanging off the ark with boats. It kills me. I can see myself in the chair I was sitting in. I forget what grade it was. It was on this side of the classroom. I was in the second or third row when I read it, and the nun was there, and it almost killed me. I realized it was weird. I said, this can't be. I said, this is an, this, nothing else in that whole character. I said, this is an absolute contradiction. Well, anyway, that stuff is being taught in that. That's a non-Catholic church, folks. It only takes one heresy. So even though early on I didn't have the right theology behind it, I always held the dogma. Now I got the right theology behind it. So questions like Laura may come up to Laura, and I'm going to say to Laura, when she reads point 31, she misunderstood that to sort of mean, like I'm saying, there is a point where you're really in the church unless you learn a heresy. No, schism also knocks you out of the church. A schismatic is not in the church. A schismatic is outside the church. He's not a member of the Catholic Church. He's not Catholic. But guess what? All the adult dummies, buffoons, were all believing it.
The salvation heresy.
Everybody I was surrounded with just swallowed it and went, you know, my parents said, that's nice. You know, we all, then at least we all worship the same God, salvation in other religions, and it goes on and on and on. And that's such an easy formula to figure out. That's how I know my German grandfather's in hell. Because he went to Mass there, and my Hungarian grandmother. I had other German relatives that may have hope, but I don't know about them. I don't know. Going back maybe a little further. But anybody who went to the church I went to, and you know why? It's not hard for me to say that. I grew up with my grandparents. They never, never, never really spoke about the faith. Never. I never heard the word dogma out of their mouth. I never heard the word heresy out of their mouth. I never heard any. So how could you call these people Catholic? You see?
Heresies. In their hierarchy, would have had to separate from the media public if they're heresy.
Oh, yeah, any of the bishops or the hierarchy.
It goes individually.
Now, let's say, yeah, individually, yes.
In some real small town, you know, in a parish area, if they know that their bishop is a heresy.
Oh, the priest, and the people, too.
Yeah,
now,
so,
here's another good example.
They do that,
exactly. Here's another thing.
Yeah.
That's what we're right about now. Here's the other thing. Exactly. You're right. The culpability on the personal level, it can happen. Anytime you embrace one of those heresies or you don't speak out against it. All right, so, yeah, let's go back to the Americanist days when they were writing about heresies in high-level theology books. They weren't bold enough to teach them to laymen, and they didn't. And there's no way for the layman to know it unless there was a theological layman. And they were not allowed to teach it to laymen. So you can have an archbishop who you really think is Catholic because you don't know about his heresy. He's a notorious heretic. He's not the archbishop, and he's not Catholic, and he doesn't have the office. But you're being supplied with jurisdiction by canon law for common error and probable doubt because you have no information of his notorious heresy. It's only in his high-level theology books. The local priest, if he has no knowledge of the guy's heresies, he's Catholic. And let's say the local priest has knowledge of the heresies but doesn't say nothing to the flock. He's not Catholic, but the church is still a Catholic church. He's not bold enough to get up in the pulpit and put in the catechism. He's not conveying it to the layman. If it gets conveyed to the layman, and it's taught, that church is a non-Catholic church. Now, the obligation, let's say a layman does come across the knowledge, he's obliged to denounce it to everybody, warn everybody, and avoid the person in religious matters. Yes. But when you read out, when this was going on early, lot of people didn't even know this. They didn't. It was hidden from them because it was kept in high-level theology books. And they were forbidden. The only time, what I'm reading now, when a lot of this stuff started to enter the layman level was in 1880s, the late 1800s, in catechisms. But that doesn't mean that a layman's not guilty himself. As soon as he's privy to the heresy and he don't say nothing, that boy's bounced. But the idea of a priest, let's say, knew about the heresy, but never said anything about it and didn't denounce it. He didn't believe in it, didn't like it, but he doesn't teach it to anybody because he doesn't want to. That church is still Catholic. The guy did not impose it upon the other people from the pulpit, or he didn't teach it in a catechism, or he didn't hand it out in some literature. That's why I said the apostate Diamond Brothers even admitted when they went into Jerusalem, they sent this priest, and the priest came out, and he held the heresy. He teaches the heresy to the flock. The laymen are holding the heresy. They're going by the new catechism. They know this. That church is not a Catholic church. That's why they told people don't give donations to it. They even admit it's a non-Catholic church, yet they go to Mass there. You see? But that's a very easy formula to figure out. Now, you may not always have the information to know each individual church when that happened, but it's a pretty good thing that we got to base ourselves on. Because I went to the idea of, you can say that an Anglican church is evangelizing Mozambique, and the Catholic Church has never been there yet, in that one district in Mozambique. It's only the Anglican Church, and that is it, preaching their false Jesus. And preaching a lot of true dogmas, but not for the right reason, from a human faith, not from a divine faith. What are we saying about that? Nobody in Mozambique who converts into the Anglican Church could ever be Catholic. Ever. 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 The Catholic Church has no presence there. The true Catholic Church has no preachers there. There is no presence, even though they're teaching 50% dogmas. If the Anglican Church is a non-Catholic Church, they cannot bring salvation to anybody. And I don't care if you believe in all the dogmas in the Apostles' Creed and the Nicene Creed. You're out. Because the dogmas are not being taught from a Catholic source and they're being believed by a human faith and not by a divine faith. It's a real easy formula. My point is, how can somebody in Mozambique learn about the Catholic Church when the presence of the Catholic Church is not in Mozambique but only the Anglican Church or the Lutheran Church or any other false church?
And there's no other sources available to them that teach the Catholic faith.
You see? This is as deep as it really gets. But I thank God on the record for that Baptized Non-Catholic Children. That was my most miraculous book, and I'll say it a million times because it was the most difficult topic. I never denied the dogma, but I had trouble theologically explaining it. But I knew, just by Catholic instinct, these people can't be. If you get the 8-year or the 9-year off the hook because you say he needs at least to hear about the Catholic faith from a Catholic source so he can know it's a heresy, guess what? We can say the same thing about Amish, a community that was isolated from Catholic dogmas for 40 generations. You could be a 60, 70-year-old man, still be, according to the Diamond Brothers, they modified their position slightly, but still hold the heresy. They then went on and said, well, okay, you don't have to hold you may not have to hear from a Catholic position, but you have to hear her. They were actually going with what I was saying a little bit, but they didn't go all the way. My point about the fact when you, a knowable falsehoods in all false religions. So, for instance, let's say you get that Lutheran kid. He's 7 years old, and he says, I'm a Lutheran, and this is my church. He's a schismatic. He didn't learn a heresy yet. Then he gets, and they teach him you can be saved by faith alone, and then he reads his Bible. He's already a heretic. He believes that. He goes home and says, all I got to do is believe in Jesus and I'm saved. He's a heretic. But he already was a schismatic before that, so he never was Catholic. Now he's a heretic. And that particular basic falsehood is something he can know by common sense and goodwill even without even reading his Bible. See, something don't make sense about that. You mean I don't got to do nothing? Why do I pray even? Why do I listen to you? There's a lot of things, you see. All right, now, any questions on that? There's a sort of answer. This was a deep issue, but...
We were at the over at the trailer park store. Yeah. It was Ruben's friend's daughter. Yeah. Anyway, she was like 5 and a half, and she was talking to us, and she was like, why do you wear dresses? And we're talking to her, whatever. And I said, what church do you belong to? And she says, well, I'm a Baptist. And she was like,
yeah.
Well, proud of it. And
yes,
I mean,
there you go.
Right there.
Yeah. And she
probably doesn't know.
I am a Baptist. Yeah.
Because she's like,
the Diamond Brothers would say she was Catholic, but until someone comes along and really teaches her the Catholic dogmas, you know, That's why the one guy that asked him said that he didn't hear about the Catholic Church till he was 22 years old and he was a Lutheran. He asked the Diamonds, do you mean to tell me I was really Catholic for all those years, even though I was in a Lutheran church and never heard about the Catholic Church or dogmas? Diamond Brothers said, yeah. They didn't really answer him, but they did say yes. And they're answering because they're trying to say, yes, you really need to hear about it from a Catholic position. These people are monsters. And that was the beginning. That's really the worst people denied a dogma, with the Diamond Brother type people that were denying it. But the factor of the more complicated situation is when Catholic churches become and flip. You always got to look at the local church you're going to. So it's possible that you have a cardinal over you who's not really a cardinal, Gibbons. You have a bishop who's over you, and he's not really a Catholic bishop. And you may even have a priest who's not Catholic, but as long as that priest is not teaching it to you in the pulpit, and it's not taught in the church anywhere, in catechisms or handouts or flyers or sermons, that church is a Catholic church. Yes, it is. You got to go back before we make any judgments. You really do got to. I know. I told the brothers a million times about when I was searching out the heresies at JP2. It wasn't easy for me to find. I was in Newark, New Jersey, and all the heresies were coming down maybe at the local levels from a guy in Seton Hall University, the bishop or a priest. I could not find anything of JP2 that to dig my teeth into in the beginning. I was going to libraries, I was searching, I was listening to radio shows and everything. Until I came across the book, Peter Lovest Thou Me, about where it shows a picture. And I said, wow, John Paul II was really doing these things, you see? But, in other words, my point is, in the Americanist days of the Americanist Church of Gibbons and all that, a lot of your people didn't have access to what these guys were doing in the Chicago Conference or their theological journals. But in the beginning, believe me, when that council came out, nobody was reading it. We're not supposed to really. Normal times when you got a hierarchy, we don't go read and interpret councils. Your bishop does. Your priest does. And he teaches it to you from the pulpit. And if he's not teaching you any heresies from the Vatican Council, you believe it's an Orthodox council. Until you have some good reason to suspect different, and then you must investigate. Then you must investigate. So the higher you go up that hierarchy, the more dangerous it is, to the point where you can't, any of the bishops that attended the V2 council, they're all out. They attended it. Anyone else who attended it, they're all out.
Hello?
Oh, yeah. Well, attending the council, signing the sitting through the council, listening to the heresies and consenting to them, or not refuting them.
That's besides the fact that they were apostates for allowing or favoring the desecration of holy places with images against the faith or morals that were began in the 11th century forward, and that were desecrating the very Vatican in which where they held the council.
They have to be avoided.
Will all the bishops of the world go to these banks?
That's another question. I think a lot of them went. I don't know if everyone went, but I think it's pretty hard to believe that even if everyone didn't go, that the ones that didn't go at least got a hold of the documents and read what went on. So I don't know if you can get any bishops off the hook. Because either they were all at the council, or whoever was not at the council is going to read about the council because they're bishops. It's their job to read. And I know, because myself even, I always, in the beginning, I thought the Vatican II documents were fine because I'm trusting what the bishop and the priest is saying. Until, Father O'Connor mentioned in his sermon that, hey, one day I opened up the council and whoa, lo and behold, there was heresy in it, you see. So, but it's a very, the way, what I have is a very easy formula to figure out when somebody falls out of the church, what kind of a church it is in culpability. The fact is, people are going to have to realize there's so few people really saved in this 20th century that one particular traditionalist said that he didn't believe nobody was being saved, that the gates of heaven were closed, and somebody yelled at him and said, you're stupid, you're wrong, you can't say that. No, he could say that if he wants. If the time of Bernard, when it was really much better than it was now, he said only, how many people does Bernard said died in that day?
Oh, 30,000
died and only three people were saved. One went to heaven and two were in purgatory.
Two purgatory and the other rest.
All hell.
Yeah.
All right, that was in Bernard's day. See, because you want to start idolizing family members, forget it. That's why anybody who was a member of the Society of St. Pius that adhered to that group is outside the church. I don't care who you are. I don't care if you didn't hold their heresies. You're a member of a non-Catholic small C church, because if you don't hold that, the Anglicans are going to come around with a curveball on you and smash you in the face with it and say, well, then what about all these young little Anglicans that are 8, 9 years old and haven't been taught any heresies yet, and they're taught that they're really Catholics, and they say they're Catholic, never heard of the Catholic Church. These guys are all Catholics. And you can have a whole Amish community being Catholic. As long as it's just don't teach them the Catholic faith, and they can never be heretics, and therefore they can never fall out of the church and be formal heretics. Let's say JP2 comes to power and you have in Minnesota or you have in France or you have somewhere a traditionalist element. You still have the old mass, aren't holding none of those heresies, don't agree with it. Or at least the priest isn't teaching it in the pulpit.
And he's not teaching any other heresies in the church.
But you could have a Catholic church even under JP2. It is possible. But the longer he was in power, the harder it is to believe that. Because look, when I was studying for the information in the 1990s, it was hard for me to get a hold of. But I was still out of the church because the local church I was going to and I was a member of. So the whole question is, when did the local churches start to teach the Vatican II heresies? You know, in the beginning, they didn't even teach them to people. Only the hierarchy held it. No one knew the stuff they were teaching in there until later on.
Is there a time when that was officially promulgated, like Vatican II made it required for everyone that's in communion with them?
Yeah, well, I would say that the time that's why I said 1997 is when it was promulgated in the new catechism. Because that was then made mandatory. They made it mandatory for all the parishes to have it. Now, you got to go parish by parish and say, because you know when that catechism first came out, the fraternity of St. Peter would not have it in their churches because they didn't like it. They still don't like it, but I think they were forced to have it after the promulgation. Because it first came out about 10 years or 7 years before, 1992, 5 years before it was promulgated. That's right. That's right. Then they were going to kick you out if you don't use it. That's 97. That's why you gave the 1997 date. All I'm saying is it's possible under JP2, and here's the scenario, to have a local church that does not believe in the Vatican II heresies, doesn't teach it, there's a priest, Father Joseph, and a priest in Africa somewhere, or in France, or even in Minnesota, that doesn't know about the heresies at all in the Vatican II Church under JP2, or knows about them, and he's guilty for not saying nothing, but doesn't teach it to his church. So what is he teaching in his church? A Baltimore Catechism that doesn't contain heresy. And there's a few of them out there.
Yeah, there were.
So he's, and they're not denying the salvation dogma.
And he's not teaching any heresy in the church. That church is a Catholic church.
Now, how rare that is,
exactly.
As time goes on, rare.
Well, like,
maybe not possible, even. Yeah.
What, because the Baltimore Catholic, was it 1890 the implicit heresy was starting to
1880s.
1880s.
Yeah.
What that implicit, okay.
1880s. 1880s.
Oh, yeah.
It was in there. It was in one of them. It was in one. It was
right.
It was in the number 2 catechism, but it wasn't in the number 3 or the number 1. Or it was in the number 3, but not the 2 and 1. Those are the main ones. It was in the number 3 one. You have to read my book. But it wasn't in the other 2. The number 1, which is the basic one, talked to all the kids and everything, it wasn't in there at all. And then the number 3, I think it was the 3 or the 2, where it was, later on they had a revised Baltimore Catechism that took it out. It wasn't in there no more because a lot of people were angry. You can see there's probably a big stink took place. And I have them home even, the other editions. It's not in there. They took it out. So that some of them don't have heresy in it. But the formula I'm giving you is an easy one to follow. But what is the probability that there were some Catholic churches under JP2? As time went on, little lesser and lesser and lesser. Were there any made? Maybe there were none even. There may have been none. It's not hard to follow if we just go in. I'm speaking to people who's going to listen to this. We'll post this. Okay, where do you live? I live in Wyoming. What church did you go to? I went to this church. Go in there into the archives and find out what catechism was being taught.
That's right. All
you got to do. It's not hard to find out. It's not hard to find out. Go in there and find out what catechism was taught in the church he belonged to. What did his superior believe in? Did he teach it to the people in the flock? People use the mass issue because that first mass issued by Paul VI, even though it was irreverent, was not heretical. So the mass is not even the main issue. So to investigate his life, you have to find out what did he know, what did he say, what did he not say, what was being taught in his local church. Now, as time went on from JP2, you can say it was less and less and less likely that you can even have a Catholic church. You can even say this, which is very probable. There wasn't any then, nor before. But the point was, at the end of World War II is when a lot of your churches were already non-Catholic churches. So it is even quite possible to say that there probably was no Catholic churches left even before the Vatican Council was called. It's possible. But you have to always leave open the possibility of an investigation of a local church and what was being taught in that church, to be fair to the people or to anybody. You really need to go in there and say, well, you taught from the, like you said, when that new catechism came out, yes, well, that's for sure, because I know when it first came out in 92, I think, and it was promulgated and required in 97, I know a lot of the fraternity St. Peter people would not use it. They didn't like it. They even rose a stink against it. They were using the Catechism of Trent. They were. I know. Even when I was there, they were using it. They would not accept the new catechism. So there's that type of thing that was going on. Now, they were heretics and other reasons because they denied the salvation dogma.
That's this time period that every one of these knows sort of once they all...
Oh, now it's now that new catechism was made mandatory to silence this opposition. They went in there and pulled a few things out. They didn't pull enough out. There's still a lot of heresies in there.
As long as there's one. So we know when we talk to them, we know just go to see your catechism.
Look at your catechism. Yes, what catechism is being taught?
They're going to be going to that one, everyone.
That's right. That's probably the best first way to go is refer to the catechism they're using in their church.
Yeah.
What catechism are you using in your church, you know? Now, the other thing, too, is that we're saying it's not just the catechism. If the priest gets up from the pulpit and teaches a heresy like Nestorius, then he just made that church a non-Catholic church. If he's the priest and he's teaching it to the people, and this is what he's teaching from the pulpit, or if he hands out a flyer in the back, and the people are learning it from the flyer, or then you go and you look at his catechism. And then all you got to do is just speak to the priest and the people, and when you find out those people are holding on, that's just confirmation that indeed that isn't a Catholic church. If you went all around and interviewed all the people in the church I grew up in, even before Vatican II, every one of them was denying the salvation. I don't know about every one of them, so I can't say that, but I would say almost everyone was denying the salvation dogma. And those who weren't are guilty for going to a church that did deny the salvation dogma. Where's the concern of the parents for their children's souls when I bring home a catechism to my parents and show them that thing about how... I didn't even show them the catechism. They didn't even care. You couldn't even show it to them. Hey, I got a problem with this ropes hanging off the ark with ships floating off it and the salvation out of the church. Oh, that's what the priest teaches. That's our dogma, you know.
That's the salvation dogma began way back in the 40s.
Yes, it did.
And you know, because the priest didn't preach against it.
That's right. That's right. That's right. It started in the 40s. That's why you could make the case, and it's very probable, but there were no Catholic churches by the time of the Vatican Church, you know. But you got to leave open that possibility of an investigation, a point-by-point investigation. You got to look at some of your local peasant churches, and I don't think they were teaching heresies in them. I don't. Till later on. You know, you get your local peasant churches where the people are just farmers, and they go to Mass, and they're not getting into these things yet. So they'll probably take up your pitchforks and try to stab the priest if he taught some of this stuff. Until later on. So you'd have to look at each local parish church and what was being taught. Because I know from certain people, even in the 40s and 50s, not everybody was taught the salvation heresy in their local church. They weren't. I think Karen told me that. Were you ever taught it in yours? Yeah, see, and you're all from the Midwest. Because from the Midwest, those Germans were, even though they were better than a lot of the rest, they knew about they attacked Americanism and everything. They kept the German communities more closed off, and they didn't want these bad catechisms to be taught to the people. You know how I first knew that? I had met this other person, and they told me, I was never, when I told them about the salvation, they said, I didn't even know what town, I didn't know it was ever taught. It wasn't taught to me when I was a kid. So I presumed everybody was taught, but they weren't. Certain churches did not allow those catechisms to be taught in their churches. And there's where you have, that would be a Catholic church. So you have all those different levels of culpability coming down to the personal level and then the church level. But once that church becomes a non-Catholic church, it's a done deal in God's eyes. He said the official doctrine of that church is heresy. So it's no different than an Anglican or a Lutheran church. You know, even Lutherans say they're Catholics. I don't care even if you say you're submissive to the Pope. That's just one dogma. The other dogmas have to all be held and embraced, or you're not a Catholic church.
Because
they denied them, and that's how they first started to deny the dogma. They stopped preaching it, because if you don't preach it to people, they don't know it. Then you begin to actually tell the people the heresy. You know, when it came out in the 1880s, it must have still made a big stink because they took it out real quick, and a lot of people, whoa, what is this? They tried. It was the first shot. Two step forwards, one step backward. You know, and it didn't hit right away. So we got to brainwash the people a little more so we can prepare them. Even that movie, the heretical movie, The Cardinal, you see all those kids believed in the salvation dogma. So that priest then taught it to them in there, and that's when that church was a non-Catholic church. Even those kids were in shock. Their obligation would have been to fulfill it, follow it up as they get older, and even then, to take the priest to task.
Which catechism had the implicit of Baltimore? Was that four that had the implicit heresy?
No, well,
my parents, they
four is not a catechism. Four, not really. It's the explanation of number three. They call it four, though. You're right.
Okay.
It's called number four,
because
but it's not real.
My mom said that's what, yeah. She had the Baltimore hand, the implicit.
It's not a real catechism. It's a commentary, an explanation of catechism three.
Okay.
Now, if you go into my article,
One of my articles, I tell you which one had the heresy in it. I think it was number 3. Baltimore Catechism number 4 is an explanation of Baltimore number 3, and it wasn't promulgated. The council itself of Baltimore promulgated 3 catechisms. And I think it was only the 3rd one, if I'm not mistaken, that had the heresy, or the 2nd one. But it was not the 1st one. And the 1st one was for the simple first younger people, and it was simple. There's no heresy. Not even baptism desire was in that one. And then you get 2, and then you get 3. And then the 4 one was an explanation of 3, and they extrapolate. They had even more heresies in their explanation. But later on, then, when these the one that had the heresy was revised, and it wasn't in there no more. Not that one always had it. But you'd always read, Revised Baltimore Catechism number 3. And everyone has their own revision. I think as many parishes as you had revisions. So each one would put in what they want. And that's where you got to determine what's going on in the local level of the church. And that's where even the Diamond Brothers always got hung up on that, because in the beginning, Bob Diamond was, he calls himself Peter now, but he was trying to make the argument that first, that he was almost going to a Catholic church. And I said, well, then why are you telling people don't give donations to it? Why do you go late and run out? And why don't you honor and call it a Catholic church? You know? Why don't you tell everybody it is a Catholic church? And if it is a Catholic church, it's not a matter of an option. That means you've got to go there. You have an obligation to donate and to go there. They're hypocrites. They stink to the high heavens. They're bastards. And they're salvation heretics. And that's where they lie. They lie in hell right now with all the rest of the salvation heretics. All right, Sister Laura, does that answer the questions?
Yeah, she says, thank you, Brother Richard, now I understand.
Yeah. All right, any questions? Yeah. As long as they didn't teach other heresies. Yeah. That's just one. But generally, that, you know why I say other heresies? Because that really was the only one that first crept in, so they really weren't teaching other heresies. But as time went on, they could have had their own unique heresies. The Germans hated Americanism. Hated it. I think that's why God spared some of their churches. They went against the Irish Gibbons in Ireland. Yeah. Oh, they hated it. They didn't want no part of it. They said, you Germans are like a got a ghetto mentality. You're keeping your own language and you're not blending in with the American community. We want you to join the Masonic lodges and all the other lodges and to become part of the American experience and society. The Germans were resisting that. And they were accusing them of not being good Americans, even traitors, almost even sympathetic to Germany during the war and all that. You got to read what was going on there. Because they said, we don't want no part with it. Yeah, of course. Yeah, I would be. I would be too. All right, any other questions from any of the brothers?
Because I remember the first time I heard about that Salvation Heresy was with a SS began in 1989. And in the churches where I grew up, we were using Mexican catechisms, and we never mentioned it.
Never, exactly. No, that's what I'm saying. I know it. I've heard this from not just this brother Aristotle now telling us. And he grew up in Texas, and he was raised on Mexican catechisms, and it wasn't in there. We just spoke to our German Catholic here, 2 German Catholic families that we know about, and they weren't taught it. I heard this for the first time from a lady, and it surprised me. So it wasn't taught in every church. You really do got to look at the local church and what was being taught in that church. Because I really do see, you get your simple people, they don't want to be taught that. They're not going to swallow that stuff. They're going to rise up and say, how could that be, Father? They have the faith of a child. They want to punch your face out. Like those little kids in the movie The Card. How could that be, Father? You know? And all that. So this gives us an accurate basis to determine things. And it's like our faith is simple. Determining who's in the church, who is out of it, is simple if you have access to the information. Not simple, or maybe not even possible, if you don't have access to the information. But I just want to prevent rash judgments on both sides. A lot of people are going to make the claim that the minute the Vatican II Church is here, and JP2 is the anti-pope, everyone's out under him, just because of that alone is going to have a problem. Really big problem. Because we had, before Vatican II, we had local bishops, local ordinaries, so-called, and they really didn't have their office, and so-called cardinals ruling the United States that were actually not cardinals, and they were notorious heretics. Because they were teaching in their theological journals these heresies. You know, and if that placed everybody out underneath them, then nobody in the United States could be saved at all. Even if the local church never taught one heresy or believed and held a full deposit of the Catholic faith. See, it has to do with the local church that we're talking about here. When does a Catholic church become a non-Catholic church? It's a very important article. And it's going to solve a lot of the problems, you know, of the people going back and forth. And it's, because I tell you, you don't hold it the right way on either side. The righties go too far and knock everybody out, you know, like in these days, and because they're not looking at it from the way I'm looking at it. With the, I'm talking about Catholic churches that become non-Catholic churches, not Anglican churches or Lutheran churches. They were never Catholic, and that's the end of that. How do you make an Anglican church a Catholic church? Do people in it have to abjure from their Anglican heresy, the priest and the flock, and they have to enter the Catholic church, and then the church has to be consecrated to the Catholic church, and now it's a Catholic church, you know? Okay. Any questions? Other questions by anybody else? This recording was produced by Mary's Little Remnant, 302 East Joffrey Street, Truth or Consequences, New Mexico, 87901-2878. And can be accessed on my St. John the Baptist website at www.johnthebaptist.us.